We are still working on an opportunity to get our rules together, and so we will not be doing anything other than just hearing bills that are tentatively being assigned under a special arrangement with the full Ways and Means Committee. We will be posting very shortly. Tomorrow's meeting probably would start shortly after 9 o'clock tomorrow under the 24-hour posting rule. It's my understanding that we will continue on at tomorrow at approximately 9 or 9:15 in the morning to start off with the Department of Administrative Services. Our clerk this morning is Karen Segrist, and our legislative fiscal office is represented by Adrian Sexton. This morning we are working on Senate Bill 5506, and I say we're working on, we are hearing portions of it, the Capital Planning Commission budget request, and we have, let's see, the order of the business today. Adrian, can you kind of fill us in as to where we go from here to start off?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to. We do have a series of guidelines that I believe your subcommittee was briefed on yesterday and the other Ways and Means subcommittees as well on the general order of information that we'd like to present to you so that each subcommittee gets a consistent series of data and input. So what I've compiled for the subcommittee is a summary of the agency's purpose, its budget, its revenue sources, and its budget drivers. Those documents indicate that the Capital Planning Commission, general responsibilities are to set long-range development plans for state-owned properties located in the Salem area, and that does include Polk County, assures that State of Oregon-initiated facility improvement projects or land use changes conform to those long-range plans and to statewide and local planning guidelines and community interests, and that also the commission's review and approval process assures that competing interests in the area are successfully addressed and that the state's capital projects and the community's own development plans and goals and the community interests are mutually acknowledged and addressed. The governor's balanced budget for 2003-05 does contain a proposal to spend $326,439 in other funds. The agency's revenue source is an assessment on all state agencies' non-federally funded positions. That FTE total for this budget proposal is in excess of $31,000. That is based on a November 2001 FTE accounting. Excuse me, full-time equivalent, Mr. Chair.
I didn't bring the piggy bank down. Perhaps my staff needs to bring that down so we'll get started. And
do I get a free one, Mr. Chair?
You get one free one. However, Representative Johnson said the staff will be appropriately fined for the rules. The rules are set out. Acronyms. We're now going 3 years, three sessions without acronyms. So, but FTE, that's got to be full time equivalency, I assume.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'd also note that the agency's budget really doesn't have any external factors driving it. It is a staff of two. They provide professional services to the Capital Planning Commission, and their budget drivers are principally personal services for the salary costs and the usual operating costs of having an office, both services and supplies. I've also attached my analysis of the governor's budget, which includes, as typically does, program description, discussion of the revenue sources and relationships, the current budget environment. This agency was not directly affected by the state's revenue shortfall because it is an assessment agency. And then a short description of the governor's budget, which will be discussed more fully by the budget and management staff. Other items that we were to cover uniformly amongst agencies has to do with budget notes from the 2001 session. There were none for this agency. No audit reports were completed within the past 2 years for the Capital Planning Commission, nor were interim reports or studies conducted. There were no oversight or policy issues that the emergency board or any interim committees dealt with. And a new factor that had been added as something that subcommittees would want to discuss if the information was available, state-to-state comparisons, and there is nothing available at this time. With that.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and start off with the agency. Doug Capps.
Representative Butler and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present the Capital Planning Commission's budget. I know from some experience that Representative Butler is familiar with this budget. I appeared before Representative Butler at least two times before, maybe again. So I hope you'll indulge us a bit for any members of the committee who are new if we proceed with a little bit of background information. I also wanted to request the committee chair that, if time permits, in addition to Jeanette Lawner, who is our commission chair, who is going to help with the presentation this morning, we have in the audience here Wendy Kroger, who serves on the commission as a representative of City of Salem Planning Commission. She serves as the chair of the Planning Commission. We have heard that John Miller, Salem citizen and community leader, has expressed an interest in providing some perspective. I don't see him here yet, but he had asked if he could be a part of our presentation. And Carl Myers, Salem attorney, served as the Capital Planning Commission chair for 12 long years, is in the audience as well, and has offered to provide information or response to questions if need be. We've pretty much put our presentation together today to follow the format that the Joint Committee on Ways and Means has provided to state agencies. And the very first question that comes up, I would like to have the opportunity to respond to. But our chair, Jeanette Lawner, would also like to respond to that question as well. That question is to identify the agency's statutory mission and goals. Our statutory authority comes to us in ORS 276-028, ORS 291-224, that's the budget section relating to capital projects of state agencies, and Administrative Rules, Chapter 110. The Capital Planning Commission began its existence in 1949, and the statute was changed and the jurisdiction was expanded in 1971, and it's been evolving ever since. By statute, the Commission's mission is to do three main things. First, to establish, adopt, and implement long-range plans of development for state-owned property within the Commission's jurisdiction, which is now Marion and Polk counties. The Commission administers area plans for major state facilities and properties, most notably the Capitol Mall area, but also eight other area plans such as the State Hospital and Penitentiary, Airport Road, which is the site of the lottery, ODOT, military, state motor pool, and so forth, the State Fairgrounds, Corrections Farm Property in East Salem, where OSCI is located, and the proposed site for the Public Safety Standards and Training Facility has been proposed to be relocated from Monmouth, and other properties of major state facilities. Now, the activity of adopting area plans and the activity of reviewing and approving projects occurs within the context of Oregon's land use laws and policies. And after the adoption of Senate Bill 100 in 1973, way back then, the Capital Planning Commission's planning function and the plan themselves were altered to fit within Oregon's new land use framework. So the area plans take on land use status. Secondly, the Commission reviews specific capital project proposals of state agencies. Now, this also occurs in the context of Oregon's land use laws requiring findings by the commission that there is adherence to the commission-adopted development plans, to statewide land use goals and regulations, and to local land use plans. The commission's statutory authority states that no agency has the authority to engage in construction or improvement projects within the areas described unless such project first has been approved by the commission. The commission uses that authority not just to rubber stamp projects, but to test them against community standards, and that means community impacts, both good and sometimes not so good. And the commission's chair will discuss in a minute the products, the value added by the commission's exercise of this authority. And then the third activity of our mission is coordination. It is also dictated by our statutory authority. In the land use context, the CPC is required to document coordination between state and local governments. That's a Goal 2 mandate in Oregon's land use regulatory scheme. Beyond the formal requirement to do so, however, the CPC, by history and practice, provides a coordinating link between state projects and local interests and a forum for resolving conflicts. Our goal is to administer a process involving all relevant parties in siting and modifying state buildings and facilities. Both the commission and its staff work very hard to balance competing interests that projects frequently present to us. If a state agency is going through the hoops at the local level, then all they need to do is to show the commission that this fact in the local jurisdiction. If the local jurisdiction concurs, then the process continues smoothly. In her remarks, our chair will indicate the instances when that sometimes does not happen and how the commission then assures that the state builds those linkages not only to meet our statutory obligations as a land use body, but to help reinforce those expressions of local concern and to help find ways to address issues relating to local impacts. But before she does that, a quick historical overview that I think helps tell the story of how the commission's role and authority have evolved and where we are today. The commission was formed in 1949, 54 years ago, and it was created in the aftermath of the rebuilding of the Capitol and a vision partly contributed to by the City of Salem and the Salem Chamber of Commerce for a Capitol Mall. The commission's main purpose then was to preserve state land for the creation of the mall. The commission was originally made up of the governor and governor representatives, legislative leadership, and city leadership. The early minutes of the Capitol Planning Commission indicate that its goal was to, quote, secure areas from commercial and industrial encroachment. I read that to mean no shopping malls, auto repair shops, and so forth next to the public service building or the state library on the Capitol Mall. And I believe everyone agrees that the fruits of the commission's labors have been pretty spectacular over the years. Now, in the early 70s, 20 years later, when major state facilities came under its jurisdiction by statute, the goal was not only the preservation of land, but for the orderly plan of development around these major facilities, state hospital, penitentiary, and so forth, just as the commission had been accomplishing on the Capitol Mall. Preservation of land became less important since those land holdings were pretty well established in those other areas, but how the land was used became a higher priority. But always, at the beginning and now, how the land was used had two tests. Did it make sense from a planned development perspective so that there wasn't helter-skelter development by the state and projects would be required to adhere to some basic planning, development, and design principles? And secondly, was how the land was used compatible with the community? Were community impacts adequately addressed? Did it further community goals as well as state agency requirements? So the mission of the commission from that time on was and is to assure that attention is paid to the impacts on state facilities, on natural resources, on historic resources, on community development plans, on transportation systems. The commission is particularly concerned with protecting neighborhoods and the area's livability. And that's why its membership includes legislators responsible to their local constituents and local officials, the mayor and the chair of the Salem Planning Commission, who have a particular interest in the future of their community. And it's also why, in the city and county's comprehensive plans, the future development on these major land holdings were to be defined by the Capital Planning Commission and its adopted plans, not the city or the county's comprehensive plans. That's the partnership that we've had, the one that we take seriously, and one that we work hard to maintain. Now, our chair would like to speak to this a bit, but there is a question that I thought in the outline that we might dispose of quickly in this context of mission. The second question that was asked was, identify agency programs and activities not specifically linked to the statutory mission and goals. I would hope the answer to this question would be there are none. And with that, I'll turn it over to Jeanette Lawner, the chair of the Capital Planning Commission. And I can't move this mic over because it's taped out.
As my mother says, my voice carries, so I'm probably fine. My name is Jeanette Lawner, and I am the chair of the Capital Planning Commission. In my professional life, I am a real estate development and land use attorney in Pacific City. As a citizen of Oregon, I am obviously well aware of the challenges that this state is facing, particularly when it relates to the ways and means of producing a responsible state government. And frankly, if I were in your position, which I am thankful I am not, I would want to know for each agency, whether it's a large agency or a small agency, what's the public value that's really added by having this agency continue its work? So as to the Capital Planning Commission, I think the answer is fundamental in that unique mission of the commission that Doug has described. We provide the representative forum for coordinating the potentially diverse views of the state government, the local government that is affected, and the public as it relates to state building projects. So when agencies present projects for our review, the decision makers are representatives of the stakeholders in the project. You have the Department of Administrative Services, city representatives, legislative representatives, and public representatives such as myself. In that kind of a forum, local officials often learn about state-initiated projects if those projects have not been already publicly worked through, like through a legislative mandate or something like that. But sometimes it's the first time that they hear about the initial planning for a state building project. They're able to early on react to the potential local impacts and provide an early indication of local compatibility and, in fact, influence the project planning at an early stage. Also, because we're early in the process of state building planning, the sponsoring state agency is required to consider early on whether this state building project is compatible with our area plans. And the area plans, as you know, and as Doug just explained, have to be consistent with statewide land use goals and with the local plans and policies. If the state agency is considering early on those sorts of issues, it saves the agency the potential for costly revision to plans once they actually get into the land use regulatory process of the local agencies. All of our meetings are public, and this results in a more complete public understanding of the goals and objectives of the state-initiated projects. The local community is given the opportunity to comment on the compatibility of the projects with the surrounding community, with the environment, and to identify neighborhood livability issues. Obviously, on the Capitol Mall, as the most visible of our areas that we work within, the impact on the neighborhoods has become a major issue that we struggle with on every state building project in the area.
Excuse me, Ms. Lawner, let me just ask a question in that regard. And you're a land use lawyer, as I understand your introduction. When we proceeded forth with the most recent building on the Capitol Mall, were there environmental concerns of continuing on or other neighborhood concerns with the construction of these buildings? And this is the first building that's been built on the mall since, what, the mausoleum, I think. So,
whatever it's called.
Or archives.
The archives. That's my bigger problem.
Yes, in fact, one of the major issues that was brought to our attention, and it's been one that's been worked through piecemeal over the years, is the impact of parking or lack thereof for the addition of new buildings on the mall. And in fact, as a result of the siting of that building, the Capital Planning Commission is now working on a cooperative effort with the City of Salem to come up with and with the Department of Administrative Services to come up with a realistic approach to how we deal with parking when new buildings are proposed. Because there is certainly, at least this is me speaking, not necessarily the commission, but there certainly appears to be a disconnect between the plans and policies of the state that encourage alternate modes, that encourage the use of transit, park and ride, and that sort of thing, and the actual facts on the ground out there and how many parking spaces are used on a regular basis by employees. And so to get a realistic look at how buildings should be planned in order to accommodate parking so that it's not overflowing into those adjacent historic neighborhoods is a major issue. So that one, the result of that was that pursuant to our existing rules, both the area plan and the Department of Administrative Rules, the project went forward with the proposed parking. But we also made a commitment to the neighborhood that we would take a look at those rules and at that area plan so that we're not revisiting this on a piecemeal basis. So that's a good example.
From a legalistic standpoint, the parking was all resolved before the building permit was procured.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you. That's a segue into a question that I discussed with Mr. Capps in my office, and I would invite either of you to respond to it. Both in the presentation that Mr. Capps made when he visited with me prior to the hearing and again today, you've talked about, in essence, your watchdog role, that you're charged with an interface between the community and dealing with neighborhood concerns and the environment. I asked Mr. Capps to do a little review on whether or not you issue provisional status for a project to go ahead. And I'm specifically referring to DPSST. And so as the first part, if the chair will indulge me, of a series of questions, could you tell me, Mr. Capps, what the outcome of your investigation was with respect to approving a project provisionally?
Thank you. Now, that's called good staff work, huh?
Great staff.
Representative Butler and Representative Johnson, the Capital Planning Commission reviewed the DPSST project on several occasions. The agency came to the Capital Planning Commission when the use of the corrections property in East Salem was first being contemplated. Of course, the decision to actually site them there had not been made by others, and the commission deferred its action, any formal action, although there was a request at that time for the commission to speak to whether or not that might be an appropriate location for a facility such as this. And in reviewing the adopted area plan, the commission indicated, I don't know if it was formally or by vote, but at least informally indicated to the agency that that was a function, were it to be approved by the corrections department as a compatible function around OSCI, i.e. OSCI.
Adrian and I already bought FTE, so...
Yeah, my turn.
You can just pile them up there, Mr. Capps. I'm sure
I sure will. I know I was going to try to... Oregon State Corrections Institute. Pardon me. I wanted to get in here. At least indicated that that would be a compatible use. Corrections told us that in the hearing process. At that point, once the deliberations, particularly with the legislature, were occurring, once those were completed and DPSST then came back to the Capital Planning Commission for formal siting, then the commission was asked then to take a look at a specific location on that site. I could go into a long discussion, and I probably shouldn't, about some issues that related to that specific site, because the specific site that was originally chosen was not compatible with some community and environmental interests. And as in the course of our, in fact, I think Jeanette was going to speak to this, in the course of our deliberations, we sought a modification of that siting. I believe the question you may be asking was, were the precise boundaries of that building site identified and then approved by the Capital Planning Commission? And I believe, consistent with what we discussed earlier, the precise boundaries had not yet been determined between DPSST and the Department of Corrections. But in order for the project to proceed, at least with some sense from the commission, that this would be an appropriate location, not just the general area of that east farm property, or, you know, whatever anybody calls it, that, you know, thousands of acres that are in East Salem, but a very specific site next to the Oregon State Corrections Institute. The commission then gave us approval for that. So that was, to some extent, provisional, pending when they would make the determination as to their exact boundaries.
Mr. Chair.
Chair yields the gavel to Representative Johnson so you can follow that line of questioning. It's an action line.
In order to tie these together and cueing off the point that the chair made, I'm trying to get a sense of, the chair asked specifically about parking issues. And I followed it with provisional approvals for projects to go ahead. The point that I'm trying to get to is, if you are in fact exercising a watchdog function, what assurances does the public have that issues of pressing importance don't get back shelved in order to allow projects to move forward, as you say, and the parking issue in a historic neighborhood never gets revisited until after the building is built and the problem exists, that the exact placement of a facility is left sort of in limbo, but provisional approval is given for the agency to proceed ahead? What I'm trying to get a sense of is that if, in fact, you represent the community and the city and the state in trying to negotiate a resolution to sticky problems, how, if you're proceeding provisionally and we'll get back to it later, is there any assurance that, in fact, you can discharge your responsibility and not have a problem created that subsequently then has to get, you know, the snake ball undone? And I'm specifically questioning what the chair raised as the parking problem in an historic neighborhood. The building's built, the problem exists, and, oh, well, sorry, guys, you just weren't in on the ground level to undo the parking problem.
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, I'd like to respond to that, because I think that we shared, particularly in the siting of the most recent building, the exact frustration that you have just expressed, if I may characterize it as that. What we have was existing rules about the building and the requirements for building parking spaces in connection with a certain number of square feet. That is, those are administrative rules that belong to a certain agency, the Department of Administrative Services. So that, if you will, is the law. It also is in conformance with the Salem Comprehensive Plan, which is a good thing. And so we cannot, I don't believe that we can make changes to the administrative rules of another agency as they then existed when the project was brought to us. The point that I was trying to make was that was a very direct sort of call to our action to take on this problem, so that before the next building comes along, we have worked through those issues and there is a satisfactory and realistic solution. Because really, it was an interesting situation, because the neighbors were arguing for more parking spaces to be within the actual building envelope or somewhere nearby, so that the cars of the employees or of those who visited the agency were taken care of off of the neighborhood streets, when, on the other hand, the Department of Administrative Services has rules about the number that they can build, the maximum number that they can build on the mall. So, you know, I don't think that obviously was not a provisional approval. It was one that was completely consistent with the rules as they existed at that time, and I think that we recognize those rules need change. I want to make one other point, if I may, about the citing of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. And I don't use acronyms because I can never remember what they mean. So that one, actually, it's not a provisional approval. It's actually a conditional approval, which, as you know, Representative Johnson, from a land use context, really says you can go ahead and do this if you also do these other things, if these other things are met. And so we have continuing jurisdiction over the implementation of these conditions. So what we said was the siting that you have brought to us works if these other conditions are met. So from our standpoint, if the other conditions are not met, then we would revisit the question of that siting. It's not that they can just, you know, go ahead without us having a continuing look at it. So that...
Two follow-ups, Mr. Chair.
You have the gavel, so the chair yields.
The issue, I'm very sympathetic to the fact that you have the constraints of the administrative rule, but if, in fact, Department of Administrative Services sits at your table, so to speak, to have the notion that at some point in the deliberations the Department of Administrative Service would say, our administrative rule trumps all, to what degree then does your table become a neutral convening point to work out these issues before burdens are visited on a neighborhood? I mean, what use are you if, and I hate to be so blunt about it, but what use is the Capital Planning Commission if the agency that is one of your collaborators and partners says at some point, admin rule trumps all, project goes ahead as conceived?
That's an excellent question. It really is. And it's something that I think the Commission deals with all the time, particularly with projects like this. And we've had, it seems as if we've had more of these lately than we've had in the recent past. I don't believe that it's a rule trumps the quote right outcome. It's that there is a search for a balancing of competing interests, which happens in land use all the time. The administrative rule is also confirmed in our own area plan. We say, in order to not clog up the streets of the city of Salem and add more congestion and to try to get employees out of their automobiles, we say, as a state, we won't provide more than X number of spaces per employee. It happens to be one space for two employees. That's a higher standard, a lower ratio, parking ratio, than is administered, for example, by the city of Salem. We do that in partnership with the city to meet their land use air quality goals. And they're also the state air quality goals as well for major metropolitan areas. Now, what happens when you try to do that, and at the same time, the result is employees then who can't, quote, find parking on the mall because it's not provided for them, end up parking in the neighborhood. That's what happens. They'll say, well, we're sorry, we don't buy that ratio. Okay, state, you're not providing the parking spaces, but we're going to drive anyway. We're not taking the bus. We're not carpooling. And that's what's caused difficulty with the adjoining neighborhood. So we work in conjunction with the city then to determine, well, then what kind of measures can the city take to control parking in their neighborhood? And what the city has available to it, and the state is working in cooperation with that, is a neighborhood parking permit program. So employees don't go to the neighborhood and park, used to be for 2 hours. They're now considering a change to make that neighborhood parking 1 hour. I don't think very many employees are going to park in a neighborhood and go out every hour and either move their car to a different neighborhood or find another place to park. And the state, in fact, is making a financial contribution, that is to say, are paying those neighbors in the Grant neighborhood for those annual parking permits. So it's that's how that balancing of interests ends up. Not a perfect solution. Neighborhood still isn't, I don't think, is too happy. Then the next thing we get to do is now take a look at where are those parking ratios that we've adopted and the state applies by administrative rule. Do they continue to be the right ratios if we're going to have this conflict of interest?
Thank you for your patience.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Senator Devlin is recognized. Please, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Capps, I just wanted to clarify one thing so that I understood. In terms of the commission's activities, and perhaps the chair of the commission could comment also, do you have, I don't want to do too much parallels between land use planning directly, but do you have area plans for each of these areas, and are you making basically decisions in conjunction with those plans or in compliance with those plans versus ad hoc decisions as each issue comes up?
Representative Butler and Senator Devlin, that's exactly what we have. For the nine areas that are considered sort of major areas in this metropolitan region, major areas of state land holdings, you know, like the state penitentiary and the state hospital and the state fair and airport road and so forth, those have been designated as area plan areas. And the commission then, over time, has adopted and readopted, updated the comprehensive plan or master plan or development plan for those areas. And then when an agency comes to us and says, we would like to do the following in that particular area, then we apply the standards, the policy standards, design guidelines, and so forth, depending on what that area plan contains, to that project. And then we make formal findings in a quasi-judicial decision-making that's appealable to LUBA. We make findings that say, yes, that project is consistent with our area plan. We also measure against other standards as well, state land use goals, local comprehensive plans, local implementing ordinances.
Senator, was that responsive?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me go back then to the Department of Police Standards and Safety Training, where you, in response to the question you just were asked by Senator Devlin, you would measure a program against the area plan, and yet in the instance of the Department of Police Standards and Safety Training, you said there were still conditions that were going to apply. Two parts to the question. Who monitors those conditions? And in the interim, is the agency proceeding ahead with site-specific architectural schematics? What I'm trying to get to is who oversees the timeline? Because if you have these area plans, they ought to have been able to get an idea that what they were planning was consistent. You've looked at it and said, yes, in the main it's consistent, but by the way, we've got 18 conditions. And the agency goes away, and they say to their architects and their engineers, begin drawing at some considerable cost. You still don't know the site. And to what degree is there a responsibility of the capital planning folks to monitor how those conditions are being met? Because you've already said that it meets the test of the area plan. And at what point does the agency come back and say, I'm sorry, we have $900,000 involved in site-specific schematics, and we're not quite sure this is the site?
Representative Butler and Representative Johnson. For a significant project like the...
Maybe the chair would give dispensation for DPSST.
DPSST is now being purchased by Doug.
Well, I asked for a waiver on that one, but I guess I didn't get it. I bought it. That's okay. Thank you. I missed that. I may want to make an investment so I don't have to buy it several times. In their case, in complex project like theirs, there is typically a multi-step process with the Capital Planning Commission. Concept review, site review, initial design development review, a review depending on how the project is proceeding, but a review just before the project design is completed by architects and engineers, and then there is a final review. Now that's perhaps more steps than actually occur, but at least those conceptual mileposts are addressed as projects continue through a review process. So in the case of that facility, I said that facility, not DPSCT, the concept came to us and was conditionally approved. The site came to us, but now you're right. That agency is going through elaborate design, engineering work, and so forth. But they still have to, wherever this went, meet these conditions. If at some point they, the commission, look at a project and say, well, that's nice, you've done all the things that's going to make your building work, but you haven't met any of the conditions, well, then the commission would not give final approval for that project, and it would therefore be illegal under the statute for that agency to proceed.
You just made my point.
Yes.
And somewhere, on a shelf somewhere, there are $900,000 worth of unusable plans. I'm just trying to get a sense, because it was my observation last session and through son of special session, that this was a project that the train had left the station, and the agency wanted it built regardless of the impediments. And my concern is now the project, of course, in the governor's budget has been slowed, if not stopped, for a period of time. But I'm just trying to get a sense of who's the watchdog for the public investment in these plans when plans are being drawn and site-specific approval has not been given. And I'm just trying to get some sense of how much teeth, or how many teeth, does the Capital Planning Commission really have in terms of your watchdog function to make sure not only do we have the right sites, but as you're moving through this continuum of mileposts, that agency behavior and agency expenditure conforms to your very vast authority to say, not on this spot, not in this way.
Let me ask it in another, so that I get a little bit better feeling for the process. It sounds like you folks have been camped out with Diane Middle and the folks from the DPSST for some period of time. How many formal meetings that are documented by the commission have there been in this last biennium relative to this specific facility with those four folks? The formal meetings where this was addressed. And kind of take me through it, if you would, what those meetings would look like, please, Doug.
Do you want me to go ahead?
But
okay.
I'm sure your recollection is better than mine.
Representative Butler, we'd have to check the record to be sure about this, but I believe four or five formal public hearing on the record meetings. Let's see, how do I generalize about this? Maybe the question pertains to this specific project, but we frequently do this. An agency, in this agency, came to the commission when they didn't know where ultimately they were going to be, but they knew that Salem was a possibility. They informed the commission of that and asked whether or not there were impediments to their locating at the site that they were selecting.
That'd be a couple of years ago.
Close to.
And that wouldn't have been a formal meeting. That would just be an inquiry of your office.
No, they actually came to the commission.
Okay.
To
got on your agenda.
Got on the agenda
a couple of years ago
and said, "Yeah, I'd have to check, but I don't believe it was quite that long ago.
Okay.
I think they were further down the road in their statewide search than
okay.
that. And that would be what I would call perhaps a concept review. Here's a proposed project in some part of Salem, and we think that the agency says we think that location would be at the correction site in East Salem. Would this meet the requirements of the area plan that the Capital Planning Commission has adopted for that area? Do you see any major conflicts? Not necessarily that they needed a response to that immediately, but they just wanted to inform the commission that they were thinking about this.
Next stop?
Next stop, I believe that they, and I have to tell you, I don't know what was going on. I can't remember what was going on in the environment around them relative to the legislative process where they were getting legislative approval to proceed one direction or another. But at some point, they came back to the commission. I believe we sensed having other sites around the state disposed of or discounted.
At a later time, months later.
Not that long ago, actually. I believe it was, let's see, where are we now?
Well, actually, this is July when we made the last final decision.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Time has flown.
Somewhere in 2002.
So
maybe late 2001, but sometime during 2002.
Okay.
They came back to us then with this second step saying, it's not just anywhere on that 3,000 acres out there. It is this particular area.
So it went from concept review to site-specific.
Site-specific, yes.
Second meeting.
Okay. Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
Then about several months later, because once they got the go-ahead for it, I wouldn't call it site-specific. It was narrowed
to the 3,000 acres.
Narrowed to the location adjacent to the Oregon Correction.
So,
right. But back to the point I made earlier, the boundaries of the building and the area that would be sold or disposed of or whatever by corrections had not yet been finally negotiated.
Okay, but
between corrections and
by this time, sometime in early 2002, the adjacent 3,000 acres identified the issues relative to sewer, water infrastructure, the commuting, the public link of transportation, and so forth. That's all being identified in early 2002.
Identified as issues to be resolved.
Okay, and then the next stop would be
In the issues to be resolved, there was a significant issue having to do with some environmental concerns. And actually, there's someone here in the audience who worked very closely with us. I don't know what he would actually say about this, but he was, and that's John Miller, was definitely involved in that because he appeared before our commission and asked for a closer review of the site-specific decision. And a period of time then lapsed. We don't do the analysis. We do the review and approval. And some period of time lapsed for the agency then to determine in this question of the site-specific, which they came back to us in July.
July of 2002.
Of 2002. Some period of time lapsed while that whole process was worked out within the community.
And by that time, those issues had been at least researched in the third meeting, the July 2002 meeting.
Many of those issues had. Not all, because this decision in July 15th of 2002 still had significant conditions attached to it.
So at that point, you're reviewing the issues relative to the full 3,000 acres? Because at this in your second meeting, the site-specific was pretty much limited to the adjacent portion next to the prison. That's what you're identifying in the third meeting then. Those topographical issues or environmental issues in that block adjacent to the facility, the prison facility.
If I heard that question accurately, no, we were still focused on the specific site next to the Oregon State Corrections Institute.
Addressing those environmental issues relative to that site.
Relative to that site.
Okay. That's in July of 2002, the third meeting.
Yeah.
Follow-up meeting since that time with the folks from the Department of Safety and Standards Training, DPSST.
I'll buy that.
Safety Standards Training.
I don't believe we've had a meeting since then, but I have a hunch that there was another meeting in there somewhere, but... Could I ask? Excuse me, the form.
Yes, Representative Johnson, please.
Here's my one other question. At one time, there was a threshold issue with whether or not the city of Salem, because I believe the site is outside the city's development boundary. Has that issue been worked out at this point, the extension of services outside that Salem boundary?
Representative Butler and Representative Johnson, as this project evolved, as most projects evolve, there is interaction between the agency and the Capital Planning Commission, and the agency and whatever the local jurisdiction is that's going to ultimately have to give building permits and, you know, planning approval for that project. So when that project came closer to our July 15th decision, many of those discussions, you perhaps could ask them more accurately because we don't go with them to communicate with the city. Many discussions were occurring.
Isn't the city on your commission?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Isn't it wouldn't it be considered a threshold issue that the question of whether or not services and at what cost could be extended beyond that Salem growth boundary had been resolved?
If I may,
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, I think that you've actually also put your finger on one of the issues that we are working on, and that is to be precise about the stages in a project that that the state agencies need to come to us. And I'm not trying to finesse this question because it's one that comes up all the time. It's kind of a chicken and an egg question. The state statute says that theoretically the state agencies are not supposed to spend any money working on a state building without getting approval from us that it meets the area plan. Right. So in order for them to move forward and to work with and actually get through a process of getting all of their city approvals or city approvals prior to the time that they come to us, requires them to do substantial, you know, engineering and design work and that sort of thing. So the question becomes, do you come to us in stages, as has been the practice, with does this site as it exists fit our area plan, and then come back later with meeting our conditions, like you've got the necessary permits from the city of Salem, when you come back to for us to actually look at the improvements that you plan to build. That's the point at which those questions get asked. Now, if the agency has been working on those things in advance and they have more information to provide to us, that's obviously a good thing. But because we feel like the statute's pretty specific about the fact that we have to be early in this process to see if these projects meet the area plans, not to see if all of those other things that eventually are going to have to get resolved before the project can go forward have in fact been resolved, we have done this staged and conditional kind of approval. So,
and I'm sympathetic to the fact that you're caught in an awkward situation, but the point that I've been beating to death here this morning is real money is being spent without, I think, some of the necessary agreements in place that you provide the forum to seek agreement. At least nobody has answered to my satisfaction the very simple question, has Salem agreed and at what cost to provide services outside of their boundary? Because the project continues to make its way through other parts of the legislature with assurances from the agency that we know the costs. And I can't get anybody to answer the very simple question for me, has the city of Salem agreed and at what cost?
Representative Butler and Representative John, maybe I could respond in two ways. One is, you're right. Two members of the city serve on our commission.
Right.
And you can be sure that if a significant project like that agency wanted to meet out there is coming forward to the commission, particularly informally, concept, general area, not boundaries not defined, and so forth, there are significant opportunities for those Salem representatives to weigh in on the Capital Planning Commission's decision-making. And if there is a concern on the part of the city about the going forward of that project, they're going to voice those concerns. That, in fact, that's the sort of the value added of the commission's role. Otherwise, the agency would go without us, would go all the way through the process, spend all the money, and then charge over to the city and ask for a building permit. Now where are they? Now there's been no early warning. The city has not weighed in at these initial concept levels to say, now wait a minute, we don't have city services out there. How are you going to provide for that? Et cetera, et cetera.
I think that's Representative Johnson's point, though, isn't it?
That is my point. And respectfully, you've explained a complex process. I still don't have the answer to my question because the department came to the e-board during the interim and got permission to go ahead with a $72 million project. And I still don't know, has the city of Salem said we'll extend services and at what cost?
Oh, well, the second part of my answer was going to be what you were just initiating. Wendy Kroger is a member of the Salem Planning Commission.
We do have Wendy signed up, and we're approaching the one-hour point here. So what we're going to do is we're going to change our we're going to play some music, and then have you got that disc yet ready? As we play music, and lots of people are going to change chairs, why don't we go ahead and invite those folks who have signed up or who have advised us. Wendy Kroger is signed up, and then I understand Mr. Miller is here, and Carl Myers. So if those folks would like to come forward, we'd invite you to come forward in that order. Please enter and sign in, and just state your name for the record, please. Please proceed.
Thank you very much for allowing us the opportunity to meet with you. My name is Wendy Kroger. I currently serve as the president of the Salem Planning Commission. I am currently one of Salem's two representatives to the Capital Planning Commission. I am a volunteer in my community. I don't work for anybody but the people of Salem, and I do it for free. So I would put that out. That's who I represent. Very short answer to your question is no.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, if I could elaborate on that a little bit, it would be good.
That'd be great.
Okay. One of the things that we have been concerned about in Salem for some time is that, yes, we sit on the Capital Planning Commission, and we believe that's a very beneficial role to serve. And I am an ankle biter, and we do say, hold the phone here, we have some real concerns. I do know that a couple of representatives of the different agencies have expressed frustration with that new person on the Capital Planning Commission from Salem, because obviously she doesn't understand that we get to do what we want. Well, no, they don't. And so that's the real balance that happens in the Capital Planning Commission. What did happen, and specifically with regard to the prison site for the Public Safety Training Center, John Miller and I do know each other. We have talked about some of the concerns we had environmentally on that site. That's one piece. A second piece is I went to the city staff and said, what have you heard? Who have you talked with in terms of some of the concerns we have about locating on that site? They hadn't heard anything from anybody. Part of it is a timing issue. Well, when do you come forward for the very purpose or very reason you're talking about in terms of money? On the other hand, what's happened very often in the city, I believe, is that somebody from the Department of Administrative Services and the building or the agency that wants to put up the facility says, well, you know, the train's left the station. You really have to do what we want, and we just want a building permit and sign it here, and we'll be on our way. You know, that might have worked when there was lots of space and not many people. Well, there isn't lots of space anymore, and there are lots of people. And so our job really is to bring to the table a partnership, a collaboration, a communication, a compatibility. These are tough issues now. Now, you know, it was real easy when we all said, oh, we'll put out urban growth boundaries that nobody can even find because they're so far out there. Well, now we found them. Okay, and we're breaching them or coming up to breaching them in many instances. So we have to redouble our efforts to communicate early and often, and that's what we're attempting to do. I think it's important to know, to recognize that Salem has, of the land we have in Salem, about 20% of it's public, and most of that state. I think it's important to know that you have master plans, so do we. Sometimes they don't mesh. Hopefully they mostly do. And that's part of the job of the Capital Planning Commission as well, is to make sure those pieces get together. There's some things that aren't in area plans because they weren't of concern yet. Now they are. Neighborhood concerns are more important to us now. Environmental concerns are very important to us. That's not to say that we don't also have extremely high economic concerns and are very appreciative of the high-paying jobs, good jobs, that our people in Salem get to go to every day at the state. We do appreciate that. We are the state capital. We know that. But I think that one of the things that you need to recognize is that we push for and hope to see better coordination at the technical level, infrastructure, for example, the kinds of things that we need to do in terms of natural resources, conditions that are going to be put. These things need to be done early, and they need to be done well. Yes, very often it's the sense of we feel that we're at the bottom of the hill and everything's rolled down on top of us. And on occasion we say, you know, we can't do that. And we do have to represent our neighborhoods and our people and our community. And that is what we do. The Capital Planning Commission is a crucial place to do that. I do bring back, when I sit on those meetings, I do bring back what happens at those meetings to the Planning Commission. We do attempt to say there are some heads-up pieces that we need to be doing. We need to be watching what happens here, and we need to be ready to respond because the state is going to come to us and ask, what about locating here? The case in point in East Salem, we didn't want to locate in oak groves up the hill, so what happened is they said, okay, we'll locate in the bottom. Well, I hate to tell you, but that's the headwaters of the Little Pudding River, which has some TMDL issues. I'm sorry, total maximum daily load issues. Do I have to pay in that piggy bank? Anyway.
It was all one breath, Mr. Chair.
So, you know, these are new. These are things that we have to kind of deal with. And I think with good heart and good purpose, we'll get there. But it needs to be that we can work this through together. And so that's what I would ask that we be able to do.
Thank you very much, Wendy. Appreciate it. Carl?
Or John?
It's John. I beg your pardon.
Actually, I think what I'll do is...
American Red Cross, you'll work. Okay, John will let you know.
My name's John Miller. I'm a businessman here in Salem. We have an urban design and development firm. My background's design. We also have an agricultural operation. I served on the Capital Planning Commission some years ago when I was president of the Salem Planning Commission. That was in the days of Darrell Rawls and Simmons. I'm supportive of the Capital Planning Commission, conditionally supportable, let's say. The DPSST situation, I think there's sort of another side to that situation from a Salem resident's point of view, in the sense that the Capital Planning Commission was the only entity that we got a fair hearing upon the issues which we were concerned about, which had to do with the DPSST wanted to build a racetrack on a sloped, rocky hillside right next to a bunch of neighbors with a mile-long, 100-mile-an-hour straightaway. And we were basically just missed. We were just like fleas on the back of an elephant, and they just, DPSST didn't even acknowledge our role in the process. And finally, the CPC was the place where we did get recognition and things changed. And so it does fulfill a purpose in the sense that that forum is, in theory, at least in part, separate from the agencies proposing these projects. But I also think, from what I saw of that siting process, that it was extremely flawed. And I'm sure from reviewing the record that it may have been so previous to the site of Salem being chosen. But the Capital Planning Commission and the legislature were given incorrect information in several instances, and I don't see that as the Capital Planning Commission's fault.
Let me ask John in that regard. This does concern me when a state agency will come in and run roughshod over a community, smaller community, smaller than the state is anyway. If they decided to go ahead and put a 100-mile-an-hour racetrack there, did they have a building permit to do that, and would it have required a building permit?
No. They had a conceptual plan, and I would guess that they spent several $100,000 on analyzing that particular site, even after it was obvious that it wasn't either politically or mechanically feasible to put it there. They didn't need utilities up on that site so much, but at that point they hadn't worked out the utilities and traffic issues with the city on the lower portion of the project either. And that's one of those situations where when they waltz in to you and say, or the Capital Planning Commission and the legislature, and say, we've gotten neighborhood positive input on this project, and they're pointing to that site, when in truth the positive neighborhood impact was on a site a mile away and another neighborhood group. I don't get stopped on the highway on my way home from here, but I think it was to a great extent because DPSSD did not understand the process. They didn't understand the context that it was public property and that there was a community in which that site needed to be fit. And I think that got to straighten out to some extent, but I guess it says to me that the system isn't working very well. And I think a lot of people point to the CPC and say, well, you know, they're a visible public forum, and they're the ones that are responsible for this. But I guess what you folks were talking about earlier in terms of what is the role, what is the distance and the authority of the Capital Planning Commission vis-a-vis an agency. And when I was on the CPC, in fact, after that I served as chair of what was called the Professional Design Review Group for the state, which reviewed all projects on state lands in the Salem area. We had the dean of the architecture department of the University of Oregon. We had engineers. And we advised the CPC early on by looking at conceptual drawings as to the feasibility, the layout. We would have caught that hillside issue instantly, and several $100,000 could have been saved. Mm-hmm. It's a volunteer organization. I've served on a lot. I'm on the solid board. Wendy's bitten my ankle many times on extracting things from me for restoration projects, and that the CPC is just in theory a great place, but you've got to have the authority, the processes, and
the respect, it sounds like, of the state agencies.
Darn right.
Carl, did you want to testify? We had you as a possibility yet, even though you hadn't signed up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Carl Myers, I'm past chair of the Capital Planning Commission, and I was not going to speak today, but I would like to add, if I may, one aspect to the current discussion. It's been my concern since the beginning when I served on the Capital Planning Commission, it remains my concern today. We do get, in some essence, whipsawed by agencies. But a participating partner in that whipsaw is the legislature that gives an agency carte blanche money to proceed with a project site-specific. You shall put the ag building on this location when that ag building, that location may not be appropriate under our... So by the time the project comes to us, dollars have been spent and dollars allocated for a project that is not the best site for that project, in our opinion, And so then we work within those constraints. We are also whipsawed in, and I will add this, it has been a continual concern of mine, whipsawed by agencies that enter into long-term leases in the Salem area and then come to us about midway through the lease, long-term lease process and say it makes more sense for us to buy that property. Had they come to us in the first instance with a proposed purchase of property, we would not have granted it. It is not in the mall area. It is not in a urban. I speak specifically of now the Oregon Health Plan building out on Broadway. It is a long-term lease. The Robertson buildings across 12th Street, long-term leases. As a friend of mine used to say, I bet you dollars to donuts that those agencies will come in, particularly if times get better, and say, we want to buy those buildings. We've invested so much. It is going to be cheaper for us to own than to lease. And we have been whipsawed into an approval of a project that we would not have granted, would not have approved in the first place, in large part because there's other state land available. One of our major tenants in the Capital Planning Commission is major agencies such as that must be located on the mall instead of out in Salem properties. That continues to be a problem, but we deal with those. But we are constrained in oftentimes by what the legislature has already approved and already done. And then we work the best we can within those limitations to the dismay of the city,
yep.
To the dismay of the public members, and sometimes even to the dismay of the state people that are sitting on the Capital Planning Commission.
It would appear based upon what you're saying, Carl, that within the mission statement, which talks about the changes in state agencies on state-owned property conform to the long-use plan, probably on state-utilized property as opposed to state-owned, and that probably needs to be a change within the mission statement because that could be inclusive of those kinds of leases.
Several sessions ago, Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix and I worked hard to try to get some teeth into the statutes for the Capital Planning Commission, and quite honestly, Representative Mannix at that point suggested that the Capital Planning Commission's jurisdiction ought to be extended statewide because the problems that exist in Salem in that interface between state government, local government, and the neighborhoods exists not only in Salem, Marion County, and Polk County, but exists in Ontario, Astoria, Klamath Falls, Bend, and every place else. As a matter of fact, there have been several instances of locations in state buildings in the Portland area that the Capital Planning Commission, had we been involved in, would have avoided the various problems and the cost overruns that came from those. I will conclude by saying I was and continue to be a very strong advocate of the Capital Planning Commission, not only as a citizen of the Salem area, a taxpayer, somebody who's very process-oriented, and I think John said it best, oftentimes we are the Capital Planning Commission is the only forum. I like to say the best thing that the Capital Planning Commission brings to the table is the table. We often are the only forum in which things can be discussed, and if you don't have that discussion, you don't have a good process, and I don't know of any project that I was involved in where we didn't reach some general consensus. Not maybe everybody was completely happy, but in consensus, in the legislative process, consensus doesn't bring happiness to everybody. But I think everybody was realized that the process was good, the decision reached was equitable to all sides, and that it was the best of all worlds, and that is all I wanted to say, Mr. Chair, unless there are questions.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the second time that I've heard this budget, and both times I think I've appeared overly grumpy. I share some of the frustration that you have, and I want to validate what you're saying. I saw the bills come through that dictated where that DPSST site was going to be, and I think that you played the hand that you got dealt. The point that I'm trying to make here on the record is not one so much of taking exception to the work of the Capital Planning Commission, because I think you do good work, and I've had an education in the interim. My frustration is the potential for the agencies to roll both you and the city. And I'm delighted to hear your testimony where there's clear evidence that there's somebody at the city who's willing to try to put the brakes on an out-of-control process. And I applaud you for doing that. It's been my observation watching this DPSST thing unfold now over the last 3 years that certain folks in that agency wanted this project to go in Salem despite a cynical attempt to look at other sites statewide, and that getting the thing built remained their highest priority. No problem with roadblocks. We'll just plow right over them as they appear. And that's really my interest in getting some of this on the record to say I think we have to be vigilant to watch for the expenditures of public money on non-starter spots, a la the racetrack out there, and to hold agencies to a standard of accountability when they come in here and make representations to the legislature that environmental issues are taken care of, we've found peace with the city. That absolutely, you verified it, is not the case, and I've asked the department in other forums if an accommodation had been reached with the city, and I have been assured that it has been. That's a problem. And I thank you all for your testimony. I am supportive of the work of the Capital Planning Commission. I just wanted to use this opportunity to get some of these issues on the record, and I applaud your work and thank you folks from Salem for coming.
Mr. for the questions? Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I ask all of you two things. First, I ask you, obviously, to support the Capital Planning Commission and its budget. And second of all, should it ever come, hopefully not, should it ever come to a position where an agency comes to you and says, get rid of the Capital Planning Commission, they have squelched our plans, and they are the roadblock that are keeping us from progressing, that you will look at the facts of the situation and hopefully support the Capital Planning Commission as doing its job, even to the detriment of an agency's plans, because at some point that may come about. That the Capital Planning Commission actually has to say, no, you are not going to do that. It does not fit with our plans. You're not going to steamroll us. And I guarantee you the agency will be back here at budget time at least, if not before, saying get rid of the Capital Planning Commission. It is an impediment to our development, and I hope you will support us at that point. Thank you
very much. Further questions? Thank you.
Chair Butler?
Yes, go ahead, Don.
One brief comment. I think, at least I have learned a lot through this process with the DPSST and the Capital Planning Commission, and I think things are getting somewhat better in the sense that I think the DPSST finally realized the context within which they were working, the land use laws applied to them, and frankly, if the CPC hadn't been here, that project would be dead because it would have been stopped over an issue that shouldn't have stopped it at all. And I guess I'd have to say that the city is not without culpability in this issue. The city and the state have not had good relationships for a long time, and I think there's a really nice opportunity in front of us where we've got a new administration, we've got new folks in the legislature, and we've got a new governor who is committed to action, and we've got new people at DAS. I think I wouldn't just defend the Capital Planning Commission as it sits. I would direct them to make some real efforts to make these projects a partnership.
Representative Johnson, recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right now, as it sits, and I think that there is a vacancy, both the senator and the representative from the Salem area sat on the Capital Planning Commission. Is that a healthy situation, or should one of the legislative liaisons to the Capital Planning Commission be from outside the Salem area?
Maybe both of them.
I think it makes sense to have representation from Salem in a legislative sense. I'm not sure that precludes having legislators from out of the Salem area serve there as well. I mean, it's state property. It's not Salem property.
May I answer that as well? Please. I agree with Mr. Miller. However, I will say that, and I have not attended many of the meetings because I was formally appointed in October, but I did sit in one of the previous meetings. With the exception of Mr. Courtney, who was the senator sitting on the Capital Planning Commission at that time, I did not see anybody else from the legislature. I definitely got the sense that the legislators didn't bother showing up, frankly, most of the time. And secondly, I do question why the Department of Administrative Services has a seat at that table if they, in fact, are often the applicant. It makes it kind of odd, frankly, to me. I think Mr. Myers I loved his expression of the Capital Planning Commission being the table. But I do have the sense that there is a niche in the table that DAS fits into a lot more snugly than all the rest of us.
That's something that probably needs to be examined from a policy committee, and appreciate that, Wendy. Thank you very much for your testimony. I think what we'd like to do is go ahead and hear from the BAM, our BAM analyst, at this particular point, the presentation of the Capital Planning Commission's budget, if we could, Cora, and then we'll come back to this issue. I'd like to wrap up sufficiently early. We've got special activities going on the floor of the House. So you'll be meeting at 11 o'clock, perhaps in the Senate as well. I'd like to end up sufficiently early enough that we can go ahead and spend just a few minutes on the theory of the direction we're going here too. Please, Cora.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Cora Parker with the Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management Division. Did that without acronyms. You should have a copy of a PowerPoint presentation, some slides in front of you somewhere, and that'll be what I walk through this morning. I realize that we won't be getting into work session today, so if I start to get into too much detail somewhere and you'd like to save that for work session, please just let me know and I can move on to something different. The first substantive slide shows a comparison of the Capital Planning Commission's budget from the actuals in 9901 through legislatively adopted and then legislatively approved in the 0103 session, and then, of course, the governor's recommended budget for 2003-05. You can see by looking at the full-time equivalency that there is a slight increase that we'll talk about in a policy package moving forward. Same number of positions, just an increase in the full-time equivalency for one of those positions. The increase in other funds for this for the commission is about 22.8%. Now that seems like a large number. Well, it is a large percentage, but also when we're talking about a fairly low base, it's dollar-wise not as huge as if you were looking at a larger budget and talking about that increase. If you go to the next slide, you just see that this agency's budget is 100% other funds. That is comprised of revenue from assessments against, as Adrian mentioned, all state agency full-time equivalency, non-federal, however. The price list assessment was created in February timeframe of 2002. So the list was from November 01, so obviously certain actions have happened related to FTE since then. There's been some gives and takes in different areas, but nonetheless, the base that you're looking at is additional revenue of just over $304,000 for this biennium. Moving to the next slide, we just talked about the governor's budget being a 17.9% increase from the 0103 through 5th special session approved budget. That is slightly more than where they were at the legislatively adopted budget, and that was because of the compensation plan increases that were approved during the 3rd special session in 2002. The budget continues funding for core programs and services, and it provides for an increase in the full-time equivalent authority for the executive director. And when I talk about that policy package, I'll talk about more specific reasons for that increase. Again, the next slide just shows that this agency has just one program unit, so everything falls into one category. Interestingly, because it is such a small commission and because most of the work is done in-house, there's not I'd say not a lot, but really not any, outside consulting work that's done for the commission. Most of the costs are in staff. You see 80% of the cost of the commission is in personal services, 20% is in services and supplies, and the bulk of services and supplies is within state government service charges, rent, those sort of things that don't have a lot of flex room as far as decreasing those. Looking at the 2103 legislatively adopted budget, it was $265,877. Again, there were no emergency board or special session actions through April of 2002, and the one base budget adjustment that we did roll in was for compensation plan changes, again, approved a little bit later this year than typically would have been. It was during third special session. Essential packages, there are really just three that this budget includes. The O&O package includes non-PICS personal service items. Those are, for this agency, just a mass transit-related increase, a relatively small amount. Program adjustments, we're removing some service and supplies expenditure limitation related to a package that was passed in 0103 for this budget. That package included two components. It was local area network or LAN connection dollars, and then some website development and maintenance costs. And in the governor's initial budget, we removed $4,200 of what was roughly a $17,000 package originally. And when the Legislative Fiscal Office gets to their recommendations, which will likely be in work session, we'll talk about the need to remove some additional funds out of that package that we've all discussed and we agree with that we did not remove enough there. I think we're talking about another $10,000 or so that we'll remove out of that package. So you'll see a decrease in the budget overall. Price list and inflation-related adjustments, again, about $7,500 in their service and supplies category is for state government service charges. Facilities rent includes another close to $1,600, and then all other inflation is just over $1,100, and again, that number will be adjusted down to reflect the dollars that we're pulling out from the other package as well. And it will be adjusted down substantially because the bulk of those dollars are probably related to that that amount that we'll be pulling out. The policy package that we have included in the governor's budget is for partial restoration of full-time equivalency. At the current point in time, the two positions, the executive director and the executive support specialist, are at point, help me if I get this wrong, are at 0.83 and 0.80 respectively. Now, there are a couple things going on in this package. The bulk of the dollars in the package are increasing the executive director's position from 0.83 to a 1.0, moving him to full-time status. And there are several different reasons that the governor has recommended that. Not the least of is just current workload. The commission, in line with statutory direction, has asked the executive director and the commission itself is working on updating several of the area plans. They're working, as Jeanette mentioned, on with the city on some of the parking issues. Several things to start, getting up to speed, I think maybe alleviating some of Representative Johnson's concerns, walking through, creating what is the process, what are the points and times that agencies need to actually come forward to the commission. So several directives have been given to the executive director, and he basically is working full-time already. So this really brings him in line with the work that he's already doing. It also brings the position in line with statute, which is to appoint a full-time director. And if you have any questions about that, I'm happy to answer them. The other thing that the package does is bring the executive support specialist person or position in line with how they are already getting paid. When when this is a technical issue, but when the budget in 93 was reduced to a 0.83 for the executive director and a 0.80 for the other position, that adjustment occurred in the budget system. On the personnel side, quite the opposite occurs. The executive support specialist was put to a 0.83 and the executive director at a 0.80. So they've actually been getting paid out of line with where they had been in the budgetary system. Now, because the higher level position was getting paid lower than he should have been getting paid, there was actually savings in their budget all along that allowed them to deal with the technical issue on the other position. But when you bump him to a full-time and you're paying him at a full-time, you don't have that savings anymore. So this is bringing in line with reality, so to speak. It's really a technical issue. The total cost of that package is $27,653. So you can see that's the bulk of the increase within the budget. And because you'll ask this question later on, with respect to the salary freeze, there won't be any savings associated with the governor's requested salary freeze because both of these positions are at the top step already, so they would not have gotten any increases during the biennium as well. So there's no additional cost savings there. Those are, I know, in a really quick and dirty format, the major packages in this budget. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I understand it from looking at the materials, and I just want to confirm this with you, this increase occurs without any additional assessment to agencies and can be done within existing resources.
That is absolutely correct, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson. There was a fairly sizable beginning balance in that the commission experienced this biennium, and so there will be no additional assessment related to this package.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In terms of the FTE adjustments, I understand the basis for that, and I understand the basis for what I'm going to comment on, too, but sometimes when you look at a small budget, things really stick out. And I'm looking at, and I anticipated this would happen, but the public employees' retirement contribution and the flexible benefits, which I assume relate to health care, and the rather dramatic increases in terms of probably in excess of 40%, in that range for the public employees' retirement system contribution, and looks like roughly 30-some percent for the health care contribution.
Representative Butler, Senator Devlin, that's absolutely correct, and that's if you go back to that chart where you look at personal services costs versus service and supplies costs. With a small agency like this, it is personal services that's driving the bulk of the cost of the agency. And as you know, you will discuss here and you will discuss in probably the rest of the committees that, or the agencies that you have before you, some of the big drivers of personal service costs right now are PERS, Public Employees Retirement System, and the benefit costs that agencies are experiencing. So, and then when you add just a small piece of FTE, those also have additional costs associated with those two components, as well as salary and other issues as well. So you make relatively small or what would be compared in other agencies, relatively small dollar costs within a small agency, and it looks like a substantial percentage growth. So you're absolutely correct.
Further questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Parker. I think at that particular point, did you have anything further to add, Mr. Capps?
Thank you.
Chair Butler, I would just like to make a couple of comments and, first of all, to really thank the folks who came and supported us to answer some of the specific questions that we had, and we had hoped they would be helpful in answering questions about particular projects. I just want to say that I've been on the commission for six or seven years, and the role of the commission is definitely evolving, and we are undertaking, as Ms. Parker suggested, revisions to all of our area plans at this point, many of which were adopted in the 70s and 80s, many of which bear no practical relationship to what the correct, if you will, what the reasonable disposition and use of some of the state properties ought to be. So we're in the process of working on that, again, with our partners. And most importantly, and in fact almost finished, is the piece that I think Representative Johnson would be particularly interested in being updated on, and that is an application for action by the Commission on particular site projects, but a more thorough explanation of what it is that we intend to do as a commission at each step when we look at these things. And I think that what we've heard here today is really going to help focus the kinds of things that we need to make sure are in that summary, because, for example, I had not thought about, as chair, good thing I'm not the executive director putting this together, but I had not thought about it from the chair standpoint, how far into the spending process we ought to sort of be allowing agencies to go after our initial review until our last review. I haven't thought about what might happen in that interim time. And so what we've learned here today, I think, is really going to help the work that we want to do in the next biennium.
Thank you very much, Ms. Warner. Yes, you have
Representative Butler. I know you're anxious to get out of here, and I just want to express my appreciation for this dialogue that we've had. It's always been good whenever we come here, and we learn things that we ought to be learning, and we are particularly appreciative of the attention that the members of this committee have given to our commission. We do operate, I wouldn't say sort of in a vacuum, but we try to do the best job we can do. But we look for and invite commentary from this committee and other members of the legislature to do our job even better. Just as a personal comment, having nothing to do with my public service or speaking on behalf of the commission, who are mostly volunteers, it is 2003, and we are in a different era. And we watch the work that you do, and I just hope, as I speak as an Oregonian, that you know how much we appreciate the work that you all do in your public service. It's thankless work, and we know you're not doing it for the money. And I just wanted to express my appreciation for the work that you do.
Thank you very kindly. Appreciate it. Colleagues, a number of things we need to discuss, not the least of which is that it appears that we were posted to meet the 24-hour requirements. We're posted for tomorrow at 9:15 a.m. And then I'd like to just, with regard to the instant budget, ask a couple of questions relative to all budgets. In our earlier meetings, we note that the governor has expanded the budget, or has grown the budget, by a total of 18%. This budget is very near to that. The growth between the close of the fifth special session and the governor's recommended budget is 17.9%. Also note that from the close of session, recognizing that there are the specific compensation plan increase adjustments during the third special session, and Representative Johnson, you sat on that that particular bill as it flowed through. That was House Bill 5091 to add an additional approximately 4% to the then ending budget of the Capital Planning Commission. That's actually a growth rate in this particular budget of a total of 22.8%. is what the request is at this particular time. Now, in our meetings, we've got the co-chairs saying, "Wait a minute," and I realize this is other funds, which basically translates into assessments against general fund agencies and other fund agencies, federal funds, and so forth. But at some point, we're going to have to come back, and even here, we're working off of an ending balance.
So you could say, fine, we would sweep it under the carpet today and it won't make any difference for 2 years. I want to come back and address the issue of the co-chair's request, both of the House and the Senate co-chairs, that the budget not grow more than 10%. And that, out of that, we're going to have a 3% cash reserve. They would like to have a cash reserve in, built in to any of the budgets we work with. That being the case, we've got some major decisions. And again, I recognize this is an other fund's budget, and that it doesn't immediately cause any consternation that it would be two more years before the cash carryover would be impaired or would be eaten away. So we've got some issues that we need to resolve in our respective caucuses and in our respective meetings with the co-chairs. As we sit down with those folks, how close are we going to budget to 10% growth as opposed to 22.8% growth? And how close are we going to watch the total of the 3% cash carryover if we're going to try and work to that? And Senator Devlin, you haven't had the benefits of the direct communication perhaps with the co-chairs, but in the handout in yesterday's full, was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday's full, yes. That 3% crops up there. And I'm still not convinced that 3% isn't part of the total of the 18%. So if we're going to be looking at 10% increases, then you're going to have a total trimming of 13% to get back to a total of trimming of 8% off of the 18% to come down to 10, and then another 3%, which would be the cash carryover. So we've got some major heavy lifting to do in order to come up with that, and then to watch these budgets, and you know, to start off with the small ones and say, you know, it doesn't make much difference because, number one, it's other funds, and number two, they have cash carryover. That's probably an abrogation of our responsibilities. So I'm going to get further information, further intelligence, if you will, from the co-chairs as to where they want us to take these, and we will also be hearing the next back-to-back budget will be the Department of Administrative Services, and those folks have a facilities organization within, and there's a question that has been brought up today, and that is the rather prominent seat at the Capital Planning Commission table that the Department of Administrative Services Capital Facility or Facilities has at the table, and I'd like to be able to resolve that. It seems like we've got the right hand and the left hand that needs to be monitoring, and we can't strangle one by allowing the other one to have a larger seat at the table. With that, I certainly would be open to any discussions outside. We won't, until we have rules and the Ways and Means process, we won't be doing any kinds of work sessions, and I would be open to any kinds of discussions that you folks would like to have with me or other members from the other caucuses as well. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Fortuitously, we're caucusing at noon today, and this is an issue that I'm going to raise with my leadership and colleagues based on your comments.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And Senator Devlin, that would be a very important issue to take back to your caucus with Senator Schrader there. I'm anxious about the 18% growth in the budget, and then the direction that we trim that by 8%, and then the direction that we add on 3% of cash carryover in an attempt to try and make sure that there's some money in the kitty before we get to the end of the next biennium or the next revenue forecast too. So if you'll get some information for us, then perhaps by this afternoon we should have some information back.
Mr. Chairman, I would hope that we would get, you know, some between the two co-chairs and the chairs of the subcommittees, we get some clear, that's an redundant, but clear clarification on this, because I was understanding it as 18 and cutting back
instead of cutting back to 13, cutting back to 10, and that the 3% was between the 10 and the 13, and not that it was 3% below the 10, which would be 7, which would be your total, which is confusing just to say it in those words. But the other thing I guess we could hope for is, since the Department of Administrative Services budget, we're scheduled for 11 days for that. Hopefully by the time we finish that, we will have permanent rules for the committee, so we can pass.
If we don't, there's pretty good likelihood we're going to be in this building a long time. We've had a very short time. Well, with that, let's go ahead and plan to meet then at 9:15 tomorrow. We appreciate your presentations. We'll see you back once again as we get ready to go into work session. And by then, we hope to have further information on this. Thank you very much. With that, we will stand adjourned until tomorrow at 9:15.
Thank you. Thanks, Jeff.